This is Ahval Online, meeting point of accurate news and free comment on the current affairs of Turkey. Welcome to our podcast series.
Hello, my name is Nicholas Morgan. I'm an editor at Ahval News, and this is Turkey Abroad. Joining me this morning is Yaşar Yakış. He is a former foreign minister of Turkey and a former member of parliament. Yaşar, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
So the first question I would like to ask you has to do with a statement that was released recently, just yesterday, where the Turkish Interior Minister Süleyman Soylu, he stated again that the United States was behind the 2016 coup attempt, and this actually caused the U.S. State Department to issue a official denial of any involvement whatsoever. So these claims are not particularly new since 2016, but why is it still that there is this belief that the United States had a role to play in the 2016 coup attempt?
I think that there is an entrenched opinion in the quarters close to the government in Turkey that United States or certain departments in the United States were part of the, or among the instigators of the coup carried out in 2016. So it's not new, it is there. And with the denial of the State Department, it will not change, it will continue. The Turkey part will continue to bring it to the agenda every now and then. And the United States will, of course, make most probably same type of the statement and bring clarification. I think it is not something new, and it is not the end of it. It will continue most probably.
One question I'd also like to ask is, because now that the United States has moved on to a new administration with Joe Biden as the president, he is now the third American president the fourth American president rather that is now having a relationship with Turkey under President Erdogan. And we've seen how this relationship has worsened over the years, regardless of political party in the U.S., regardless of who was president. But I would like to actually ask you something to compare the present to the past, because yesterday, former ambassador to the U.S., Namik Tan, he also released a statement that over Twitter that he was surprised by how the Turkish government had issued a rebuke of comments made by the State Department over the ongoing university protests at Boğaziçi in Istanbul. And he found that the language was surprising to really even just consider. So what I want to ask is, how does, say, Turkish foreign policy making today compare to, say, previous times? Like when you were still serving in government or during Namik Tan's tenure?
Actually, the refraction point in Turkey's relations, there are many refraction points in the relations between Turkey and the United States. There was one in 1960s with the letters by President Johnson to İsmet İnönü. And there was another refraction point when the United States imposed embargo on the sale of or the provision of arms to Turkey. And there were many, but the recent one, or the one that is contemporary with the coming to power of the ruling party, AK Party, it is with the rejection by the Turkish parliament of an authorization of a motion which were asking the permission of the Turkish parliament to let the American troops go through Turkey and open a new front in the north of Iraq. When this motion was rejected, so everything started there and it worsened. Then all the three or four presidents that came in the meantime followed, because this attitude of Turkey was at least one part of the United States administration, mainly Pentagon, did not want to forgive Turkey for having given the impression, first of all, that it will authorize the American troops to go through Turkey, to cross Turkish territory, to open a new front in Iraq. When this did not happen, so America, United States started to grow angry, and it continues with other events in the meantime.
I think that it's a very fair characterization to describe the United States and Turkey's relationship is also being defined by the constellation of other players that influence it, whether it's Russia, Israel, or some of the Turkey's Gulf Arab neighbors. But of those, I'd like to first focus actually on Russia and what that could mean for what role that plays in Turkey's relationship with the U.S. Because in recent years, we have seen a lot of cooperation between Turkey and Russia, but also a lot of competition as well. So I know that in Turkish newspapers and columns, often they have, especially in the last month since President Biden was elected, what is that Turkey can play a role for the U.S. in resisting Russia and their expansionism in some areas, even though, of course, it is still cooperating with Russia in places like Syria or Libya. Do you believe that the U.S. under the Biden administration really can work together with Turkey in relation to Russia anywhere?
Well, first of all, let's go to the beginning of Turkey-Russia relations. After the dismemberment of the Soviet Union, there was an opportunity for Turkey to cooperate more closely with Russia. At the beginning, there were difficulties because there was lack of mutual trust. And Russia thought that Turkey was competing with Russia in the ex-Soviet republics of Central Asia, the republics of Turkic origin. But later on, Russia understood that Turkey did not want to compete with Russia. On the contrary, cooperate with it, and also to establish brother relations with the countries, with the Turkic republics of Central Asia. So the starting point of the better relations between Russia and Turkey goes back to the dismemberment of the Soviet Union. Later on, with the increase in the economic relations, these relations have become very strong, and with laying down of the gas pipeline through the Black Sea and receiving gas from the Balkans, etc., and Turkey's auction to construct by Russia a nuclear power station in Turkey to be owned and operated by Russia, all these things establish trust between Turkey and Russia, and Turkey wants to continue this. One thing that is characteristic in Turkey-Russia relations, that because of many controversial questions between Turkey and Russia, the two countries succeeded to compartmentalize their relations. Compartmentalize, in my sense, when there are shaky relations in one area, it should not negatively affect another area where there are good relations. So the areas where there are good relations should continue. Those areas where there are less good relations should be kept there. So compartmentalize the relations. Turkey and Russia succeeded in doing so. Then, of course, the economic relations grew, and then Turkey, during the Syrian war or the Middle Eastern war, needed badly the air defense system to defend itself from the attack coming from the Middle Eastern countries, and opened a tender. China won the tender, but because of the American embargo, Turkey decided to give up the Chinese option. Then another auction was opened. Russia turned out to be the best competitor, the best complying bidder, and Turkey bought Russian system of air defense. America has grown angry, and this is where we are at present. But Turkey, I understand, uses its rights of a sovereign country to buy what is available in the market and what is the better price. And especially, it could not buy the American air defense system, missiles, Patriot missiles, because United States wanted to attach conditions for the use of it and refused to share technology with it. So all these conditions and circumstances contributed to this difficulty, which is now at our hand between Turkey and the United States.
Do you think, though, that there is room for the U.S. and Turkey to actually, say, work together when it comes to Russia in some areas? Or do you think that it's more likely to continue where Turkey's going to maintain its cooperation with Russia at the same time as competing with it, where their interests differ?
Actually, if you put aside the S-400 air defense system, and of course, the counterpart of it is the exclusion of Turkey from the F-35 program, which is connected. Two things are connected. If we put aside these things, Turkey maintains good relations with Russia, as do all the other NATO countries with Russia. So cooperation with Russia is not something unique in the case of Turkey. Almost all countries of NATO, at varying degrees, cooperate one way or another with Russia. So I think that Turkey will continue this this cooperation, because Turkey's economy and Russian economy are so intermingled with each other. Now that the nuclear power station is under construction, it's going to finish in a few years' time, and Turkey buys up to 50-55% of its gas from Russia. Now with the Turkey stream or Turkey pipeline, whatever it's called.
Yeah, Turkey.
Which was due to go to Bulgaria, then it was rediverted to Turkey. All these things makes that the future of the Turkish-Russian relation will be stronger in the future than in the past. Hmm. And we have to put aside the question of S-400, and this question has to be discussed, debated between the United States and Turkey. I understand that the Biden administration prefers, unlike Trump administration, to work through institutions, institutional relations. So Minister of Defense versus Pentagon, State Department versus Turkish Foreign Ministry, and all the other ministries alike. So when the professionals of these areas get together, they will understand each other better, and they will come to a conclusion one way or another, which will satisfy both sides. We need to meet somewhere in the middle. United States should not seek to try to impose at all costs whatever it thinks, believing that what the United States believes is right, what Turkey believes is wrong. This is not the approach. And the Turkey, as a sovereign country, of course, will continue this approach. And I hope that the two NATO countries should find a middle ground where they can protect each other's interests.
I also mentioned Turkey's relationship with some of their other neighbors in the Middle East, whether it's Israel or Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. All of those who the United States considers partners, despite the friction it may have with many of them, whether it's with Israel and Saudi Arabia when it comes to Iran or on human rights abuses in Saudi Arabia, the war in Yemen, of course, Biden announced he's withdrawing support from this week. But all of these countries, Israel and the Gulf countries, they have their friction with Turkey as well that has built up over the years. I know that historically Joe Biden himself actually worked towards a reconciliation during the Obama years between Israel and Turkey that unfortunately did not hold up more than a few years. And Turkey and Israel have been they have been considering restoring relations at some point, or at least Turkey has been stating their willingness to do so in recent months. But despite these frictions between, say, the United States and their other Middle Eastern partners, do you think that easing the rivalries, at least between Turkey and some of these countries like Israel and the Gulf nations, do you think that should be a priority again for the Biden administration?
Well, even if it is not a priority for the Biden administration, it has to be a priority for the Turkish administration, the AK Party rule, because Turkey is isolated and is becoming further isolated in the international arena. So Turkey needs to renew its good relations with the countries of the region. But the countries of the Middle East that you mentioned, Israel, Saudi Arabia, and Iraq, Syria, perhaps Egypt, and perhaps Iran, the dynamics of the dynamics of relations between Turkey and these countries are different. The composition are different. So the point where it will arrive ultimately are also different. With Israel, Turkey should not have any problem because Turkey and Israel have always been very good friends, two democratic countries in the entire Middle East, democratic government. Now that Turkey is becoming more religiously minded democratic country, despite this, it is a democracy better than many Middle Eastern countries. So Israel and Turkey had this common. Furthermore, Turkey was the very first Islamic country to recognize the division of Palestine into Arab Palestine and Israeli Palestine. Actually, it worked in another manner. When the question of dividing Palestine into Arab land and the Jewish land, Turkey opposed it because it thought that historically this was one united geography, and it opposed. But when the United Nations decided in 1947 to divide it, then Turkey was the first Muslim country to recognize Israel as a state, first Muslim country. And this continued from that time on, and the Turkey's relations with Israel have always been very good because of the strong Jewish community also in Istanbul, which part of them emigrated to Israel after the establishment of the Israeli state. So the relations have always been very good, and Israel and Turkey were the only democratic countries in the region, so this was a uniting factor. And also economic relations developed very well. So all these things contributed to the good relations between Turkey and Israel. And as a side effect of this, Israel or Jewish lobby in the United States, in the Congress, were the strongest lobby in favor of Turkey. When there was a motion, something to be discussed in the Congress, either in the House of Commons or in the Senate, the Jewish lobby always played in favor of in Turkey. So this was a very important asset to counter the Greek lobby against Turkey and Armenian lobby. The Jewish lobby was countering them. Now that the relations went wrong for a reason difficult to explain, most probably religious factor is one of them. So Turkey is siding with Hamas. Hamas is...
It's recognized as a terrorist group in the United States, of course.
It is terrorist. It was terrorist. I mean, Turkey did not recognize, did not support Hamas for several years. And Hamas and the Muslim Brothers also had close relations. And in Turkey, the ruling party, AKP, AK Party, has also ideological resemblance with the Muslim Brotherhood. So there is an affinity that goes back to Hamas, Muslim Brother, and the Turkey's ruling party. Mm-hmm. Because of this, the relations between Israel and Turkey went wrong, and Turkey committed a lot of mistakes in its relations with Israel. The Mavi Marmara was a mistake, and the cutting the relations was a mistake, etc. So relations with Israel is one set of things whose dynamics are not the same with the relations with Saudi Arabia. With Saudi Arabia, we should not have any problem because, I mean, both are Sunni countries and Turkey is dominated by Sunni ideology. The Khashoggi murder was a case, of course. But it had to be solved amicably again by catching the people who were responsible for it and punish them. Relations with Iran is entirely different because Turkey's relations with Iran has very little in common with Turkey's relations with United States, Iran, and Turkey and Iran have completely different content of the relations. Iran and Turkey have been side by side important country in the Middle East for centuries. The present border between Turkey and Iran, which was drawn in 1639, 380 years ago, is the one of the oldest borders that did not change one inch throughout the centuries. So there is a stable relation. Sometimes the two countries kick each other under the table, but later on they come to a modus vivendi and they continue the relations. So Iran and Turkey, despite difficulties that they have, Iran is governed by a Shia authority and Turks are majority Sunni. This is a dividing line. There's a very strong Azeri, Turkic speaking people in the,
yes,
in Iran, so which is estimated between 26 and 35 million. So this is another factor, but despite this, the two countries maintain stable relations. Mm-hmm. And Turkey does not support American embargo on Iran because it affects negatively Turkey's relations with Iran from the economic standpoint. So the relations with Egypt is entirely different. I mean, with Egypt, Turkey did not have any problem. It's only because the Egyptian regime of Morsi, which was Muslim Brotherhood-minded and which has ideological affinity with Turkish ruling party. So when Morsi was overthrown by Sisi, then Turkey cut the relations. It is mostly ideological. I mean, it is because of the Muslim Brotherhood like-mindedness that we have bad relations. So the dynamics of all relations are different. So they cannot be put in the same basket and assessed in the same manner.
As you mentioned in the beginning of this question, that it should stay a priority for the Turkish government to try to improve these relations. And that's why I think it's an interesting question also whether or not, despite the tensions between the Biden administration any U.S. administration in the last several years and the Turkish government, whether or not they would do more in this direction just to see a general relaxation of, you know, the years of tension that have so far been brewing between, you know, frankly, many American allies at this point in the region. And given Biden's own history on the topic, it does seem like an area they can potentially work in.
Actually, Russia is working hard day and night in order to drive a wedge in NATO. So isolate Turkey or distance Turkey from NATO and create a crack in NATO. And the United States and Turkey should not fall into this trap. Fortunately, Biden is a person who knows Turkey.
It's a long history of Turkey, yes.
I mean, the background, who came to Turkey several times and who served as senator for decades and who served as the vice president. So it is not like Trump, who decided on telephone, do it and do that without considering thoroughly the items which is under discussion. So I presume that the relations between United States and Turkey in the Biden period will become more institutionalized.
And that'll apply to the Middle East also, with those countries.
It will have positive effects in the Middle East. And Turkey, without the American intervention, has to improve its relations with the Middle Eastern countries, with Egypt to begin with, and find an exit strategy, both for its involvement in Syria and in Libya. And it should also balance its relations with Iraq and continue the good relations or fluctuating relations with Iran as it was in the past. So I'm more optimistic about the future relations between United States and Turkey, because if the United States does not want to create a crack within NATO, it will be NATO which will lose, Turkey will lose, and the United States will lose. All of us will lose. Mm. And I don't think that both Biden himself and his institutional mechanism will allow this to happen.
Mm. Speaking of NATO, I think it's important then to ask about how the U.S. and Turkey relationship also includes very much the Turkish relationship with the European Union, especially with all of the issues going on in the Eastern Mediterranean between Turkey, Greece, Cyprus, and France. And of course, this is at times tied into some of the other issues like what Turkey has with other Middle Eastern countries like Egypt and Israel, or the war in Libya. But, you know, just as you mentioned, Joe Biden has a lot of history when it comes to Turkey. He also has a lot of history when it came to some of those issues in the East Mediterranean that often isn't brought up, such as experience with, well, he was still around when, you know, the initial partition of Cyprus took place. He has a long history with Greece. And when he was running for president, he also made critical statements against Turkey's role in that region. So back also in December, when the European Union declined to sanction Turkey, as Greece and Cyprus might have hoped for, the reason given was in part because they wanted to wait on the Biden administration to come into office to coordinate policy together. But taking that, I want to ask you if you think the U.S. taking a stronger role in this conflict will actually help it be solved, or do you think it carries a lot of risks of alienating one side or the other?
There are risks because Biden in the past was very active in the anti-Turkey motions being debated in the U.S. Senate, U.S. Congress. I saw recently a clip somewhere in which Biden introduced himself as, now you have a good friend in the White House, Joe Bidenopoulos. He referred to himself as Bidenopoulos with the Greek ending mm-hmm. of the family name. This shows to what extent he committed himself to the Greek cause. In the past also, he always supported the anti-Turkey motions in the U.S. Congress. So there is this past. But of course, despite this, Biden is a statesman which has a long history. So he is likely to make lesser mistakes than Trump, who decided, instantaneously. So these parameters are there. So we have to bear in mind that we cannot expect, when the two sides, Greek side and Turkey side, are on equal footing in being right, Biden will favor the Greek side. It is, we expect this. But in many cases in the Eastern Mediterranean, Turkey is so right. It is very strong. It has very strong right, provable right, that even a pro-Greek statement cannot easily deny to Turkey. For instance, the question of the Castello Rizzo Island, which is a tiny island of 10 square kilometers, and which, because of this tiny island, Greece wants to get 4,000 times bigger maritime jurisdiction area in the Mediterranean because of this island. It is unfair. And many verdicts of the International Court of Justice, like the ones in Jersey Island, in the
The English Channel.
In the English Channel, and also Martin Island in Canada. So, and 17 more, there are 17 more different court cases that proves that Turkey's case is right. So when there are all these proven examples, I presume that even a person who is biased in favor of Greece will not accept, will not admit that Turkey is wrong. There are areas, gray areas, where Turkey is not as strong as the Castellarizo case, but it depends. I mean, there are so many questions in the Eastern Mediterranean and the Aegean Sea that for everyone, there's a different criteria. So Eastern Mediterranean is one thing. You also mentioned the relations with the European Union, and European Union also plans to put to impose sanctions. Sanctions in the past did not work against Turkey. On the contrary, it helped Turkey to develop its own defense industry. When United States imposed embargo in 1974, thanks to this, Turkey established the present defense industry directorate and started to produce defense equipment. The drones that played very important role in Idlib,
the Bayraktars,
and also in Nagorno-Karabakh are also produced of this wrong decision or embargo put on Turkey by the United States, that Turkey decided to develop its own industry. So when embargo is imposed on Turkey, it works in favor of Turkey in the long run. In the short run, there may be difficulties, but I don't think that any country in the neighborhood will invade
one another. Yeah.
The Turkey, so Turkey can sustain its defense for some time, and by that time, Turkey will develop its own industry. We have a proverb in Turkey. We say that bad neighbors make you own utensils that you did not have, because the bad neighbors will not borrow, lend you kitchen utensil and the other. So you have to buy it. So what the United States is doing now, and what the European Union is also doing, as a bad neighbor, they push Turkey to acquire its own utensils.
Mm-hmm. So I would like to just bring the conversation back around to the U.S. relationship with Turkey, just bilaterally, as my last question. And I saw an article by former Turkish diplomat Sinan Ulgen. He's also now at the Carnegie Institute in Europe. Yeah. And he had an op-ed in the Financial Times where he said that in terms of a possible reset, to borrow that term, the United States and Turkey, it was possible, he said, but it would be very difficult. And his proposed suggestions were that the U.S. would need to rethink its support for, the Syrian Kurds, the YPG, set conditions for operating the S-400 without getting rid of them, lifting the sanctions on Turkey and letting them back into the F-35 program. Those were some of the suggestions he offered in his piece, but he didn't necessarily offer too many specifics on what exactly Turkey could offer also as compromises to the United States. Since, of course, this compromise will have to go both ways if they were to want a reset. But what I would like to close off and ask you is, what kind of concessions do you think Turkey would have to make or is ready to make to actually achieve any genuine improvement in the relationship with the U.S.?
Again, for each item that you mentioned, that's to say S-400 and the Kurdish issue and the others, the dynamics and the composition are different, so needs different medicines to cure them. On the Kurdish issue, for Turkey, it is an important question, but Turkey has to understand that the Kurdish question is also very important for the United States. Actually, Kurdish cause, not the present YPG and the PKK on the PPYD, yes, etc., but Kurdish cause in general is important for all big countries that have the international aspirations, such as the United States, European Union, or United Kingdom, Russia, etc. These countries need to have the Kurdish card in their pocket. It's not only against Turkey. It is because the Kurdish issue, not the cause, but the Kurdish issue, is an important issue with 35 to 42 million inhabitants, Kurdish people. It is the only people in the world that do not have their independent states. And these Kurdish people are spread in mainly in four countries in the Middle East, which are all very critical countries: Iran, Turkey, Iraq, and Syria. And the majority of them are oil-rich countries. And any big country, global power, would like to have this such an important card in its pocket, so that it could play in the when it becomes necessary against, to divide Iran, to create turbulence in Iran or in Syria or in Iraq or in Turkey. So it is only natural that all big countries, Russia, Britain, and France, and the United States, wants to keep this card in their hand. Turkey has to understand this to begin with. And second, there is a second reason for the United States, not for the others, United States, to keep the Kurdish card in its pocket. It is the security of Israel. Israel is surrounded by hostile countries, Arab countries. And in international relations, there is a golden rule which says that you have to be in good terms with the countries which is beyond your immediate neighbor, so that when your neighbor does something wrong, you can use the country beyond your immediate border as a leverage. So for Israel, the hostile countries which is surrounding Israel, they need friendly countries beyond the immediate neighbors. In the past, Turkey and Iran were good neighbors, I mean, good second neighbors for Israel. Now, Kurdish entity, whether it is going to become an independent state in the future, in the long run, of course, there is possibility for them to become independent countries, depending which country we are talking about. In Iraq, they are very close to independence. They even carried out independence referendum and they won it. But the international constellation, the order of the stars in the sky, were not suitable for the approval of the independence, but it is there. And in Iran, we do not know at what stage the Kurdish independent movement is strong, but at least there are two provinces in Iran, which is called Kurdistan, mm-hmm, inhabited by Kurds. In Syria, depending how the Syrian situation will emerge, the Kurds will either gain some sort of municipal rights of decentralization, or they may have autonomous regions, or in the future, perhaps independence. In Turkey, I see that the Kurdish situation is slightly different because the biggest Kurdish city in Turkey is Istanbul. It's not Diyarbakir. Mm-hmm. The second biggest Kurdish city is again İzmir, not Diyarbakir. The third city is perhaps Mersin, again not Diyarbakir. So the Kurds are everywhere in Turkey. They own factories in the outskirts of Istanbul. They own waterfront villas, yalıs on the Bosphorus. They own holiday villages on the coast of the Mediterranean. There are tens of thousands and perhaps over 100,000 Kurdish young men and young girls are working there. So if one day the question of the separation of a Kurdish independence somewhere comes to the agenda, I wonder how the reasonable Turk, the mainstream Kurds will vote. Would they like to stay the citizen of a Turkey with their factory in Istanbul and waterfront villas in on the Bosphorus and holiday villages or on the Mediterranean? Or would they agree to live in the on the top of mountains of Jilo Mountains in the east, in a landlocked country and a small country, how many population will there be, we do not know. So we should not, of course, there are idealist young Kurds who would not settle for anything less than full independence of Kurds. But we should not look after them, which we should not try to persuade them. Instead, we should look at what the mainstream Kurds believe. Mm. My perception is that mainstream Kurds in Turkey would be happier to be part of 84 million inhabitants Turkey, and with their factory in Istanbul, and the holiday village in the Mediterranean, etc. And but enjoy cultural freedom, fundamental rights and freedom. If Turkey achieved this, both Kurds and non-Kurds in Turkey, Turks, Laz, and the Circassians, Georgians, etc., living in Turkey, they will all benefit, and Turkey will be a happier country. So the cause of the Kurdish cause surfaces in Iraq in a different manner, in Syria in a different manner, in Iran in a different manner, in Turkey in a different manner. So Turkey, instead of following the present policy and in front of the falling in disagreement with the United States, it could have done something much, much reasonable, in my opinion. Instead of pushing the PYD or YPG, the military branch, into the arms of PKK, which is recognized as a terrorist country in the United States, they should find a middle way between the Syrian Kurds and Turkish Kurds, and incorporate the United States in this bargaining and tell these Syrian Kurds that, look, United States is here today, Russia is here today, but they will go one day or another back from this period. But you and I, you the Kurds and we the Turks, we are going to stay here forever. Our families are divided. One brother is on the Syrian side of the border, the other is the Turkish side. So we drink the water of the same river. We enjoy the same geography. So let's find a way to protect each other's interest. For instance, we do not allow you to implement the policy of forced immigration of the Turkmen villages in Syria and bring in Kurds from other places and change the ethnic composition of this area. We don't allow you, and the international community will not allow it either. So United States, Turkey, and even Bashar Assad, if you come together and agree on the principle that is interesting and that is acceptable to the international community, this is how the Turkey's Syrian Kurdish problem could have been solved.
Mm-hmm. And what about the other areas where they can find some sort of compromise or offer a concession, like say the S-400, that one, of course, and the sanctions? Those two also seem to weigh, you know, of course, very heavily on the U.S.-Turkey relationship. And, you know, it just took a whole new level in December when the Trump administration actually initiated those first round of sanctions on Turkey. Do you think that there are concessions that Turkey can find there when it comes to the S-400?
For the 400s, I believe that Turkey cannot lock them in a storage. It is difficult. And as long as there is no war between Russia and Turkey, these good relations will continue. But Turkey may find, I mean, NATO soldiers, the officials, they can find a solution to keep the S-400 separate, which cannot affect the NATO air defense ground environment. Because America, United States at present, claims that the S-400 may identify the weaknesses of the F-35.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the weaknesses of the F-35 could be identified by the Russian S-400, which is deployed in Latakia in Syria, or in the Baltic Seas, in Bulgaria, in many other places. There is a way of separating and preventing that the harm that could be done to the F-35 by the S-400 could be limited as it is in other countries. So Turkey's F-400 will not be any worse danger than the S-400 or F-300, like in Crete. And there is also, of course, in Latakia now. So it is there. You don't need the border of Turkey in order to identify it. It is there. I mean, you can identify the weaknesses of F-35 with or without the S-400 being deployed in Turkey. So I think that there is a way for the technicians, for the knowledgeable people in this area, to find a middle ground on this area.
Okay, well, I do also feel like, you know, there are a lot of other topics that I would like to go into further with this relationship. There's bound to be a lot more coming in the next few years with the Biden administration, with the way things have already started. But Yashar, I really do appreciate getting your time today and having you on the show. I do hope that I can have you back on sometime in the future to go back into these.
Okay, thank you. With pleasure.
My name is Nicholas Morgan, and this is Turkey Abroad.
You can follow Ahval News Online podcast series through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. All you need to know about Turkey is here, for your ears, mind, and attention. Thank you for listening to our podcast.